Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Siakam, the slam!
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Strictly Hoops with CJ Miles. Rate, review on your podcast platforms and on YouTube. Like, subscribe there as well. The man is back. Been in the trenches, and you're here to deliver this content.
The trenches, for sure. Like, I literally, like, you can't see it. I have, like, his chair, one of his little chairs, rocker chairs, in here in the room with me. Because if I'm going to do any type of work in here, I have to bring him in here with me, and we just hang out. And hopefully, But I'm off duty right now, so.
Is raising a child in their first few weeks of life harder, or is it a playoff game that is more difficult?
Yikes.
That's hypothetical.
I get to sleep before the playoff game. Oh, that's different now. Like, I will say, because I am somewhat, like, this is not a knock on anybody else that played the league or any dads. I'm a hands-on. So, like, especially when we had Ava, I was thinking about this yesterday. I was thinking about the fact that I was not sleeping and going to play games. Right. I'm tired now and not playing games. And I'm thinking about how I did this during the season. I was like, I don't even realize how I was doing that. Like, I was thinking about this the last couple of days. Like, I've been exhausted. And I'm thinking, like, man, I was coming home from the road doing this at home and then playing. Like, obviously I would get a little bit more sleep because the situation was a little bit more sensitive, but still crazy.
Yeah, that's a whole nother conversation too. We're gonna get to Fred VanVleet, his status right now, but when we had that chat with him a few months ago, that was a topic that I wanted to get to, but we ran out of time, unfortunately. But that is something that I've been curious about. You know, what is it like for a dad when they have their first kid? How involved are they? I'm sure it does vary. And if you're more hands-on, I mean, you made it through, but I mean, you guys are wealthy people. You could probably get the help that you need to make sure the kid's getting what they need. But also it's your son or your daughter. It's your first, your second. It's hard to just be like, okay, I'll go get this sleep in and we'll see you tomorrow. So
Especially when you're coming back and you haven't seen them already, like you've been on the road.
Yeah.
Like, so many things that go into that, but yeah.
So, making a very, very, very odd switch to NBA free agency.
Great segue.
Yes. Again, with CJ, we're going to talk a little Fred. We're going to talk about some of other combo guards, point guards that could make sense for the Raptors, most notably Gabe Vincent, if Fred does indeed play for another team next season. Probably the Houston Rockets, because they're throwing a lot of money at him. And then we're going to wrap it up with Grady Dick, because who better to learn about Grady Dick and his mechanics and shooting and all that fun stuff than CJ Miles. But starters, okay, so in your career, I went back and I looked at it. In terms of free agency, you signed four contracts. 2008, it was a four-year with Utah. 2012, 2 years with Cleveland. July 10, 2014, a four-year with Indiana. And then 2017, you signed a three-year with the Raptors. There's maybe some more after that, but those are like the big ones, I guess. What is that process like, especially at this time? Like, you're heading into July. What are you talking to your agent about? How are you feeling offers? Are you being patient? Are you anxious? What's going on?
Me personally, I hated it. Just like, yeah. I just, because it's being such a basketball first guy, like, I know that's part of it. And I just wanted it over with, like, you know, but I always looked at it. So the first time when I was leaving Utah, I was very anxious because I've been in Utah for 7 years. So like, I knew I was out of there at that time. It was just time. Like, I knew just where I was at. I wanted to leave, not in a bad way. I just wanted to explore. I wanted to see different things. The team obviously had been broken apart. Guys were leaving. It was time. That one was very anxious, just because I didn't know anything. I had never
young. Yeah, you're young. And
I'd never been in the situation where I was leaving. I didn't know anything. I only knew Salt Lake City. But the biggest thing always was for me and my agent, when we talked, was obviously there's money involved, right? And you kind of know where you're going to be at. Sometimes the market jumps or falls, something crazy happens, but you kind of get a scale of like guys the year before and then what you're going into, guys that are on under contract, what they're making with your numbers, this type of thing. So you always try to, unless it's this drastic thing, try to make sure we're looking at what's better for us in the long run also. What's going to be better basketball for me? What's going to allow me to be able to grow some more or to play the best I can play to even start thinking about to be ready for the next contract or just to where I can actually help that team and where I fit on that team. That was always first for me. It didn't matter how much I paid if I was going to be – I got paid if I was going to be miserable. Always felt that. Like, obviously, unless somebody's offering you five and somebody's offering you 50, you don't leave money on the table. But most of the time, the discrepancy is not that big of a deal where you can't choose being happy over that. And that was always big for me. But during the process, you just kind of listen and you just kind of watch. You know, some guys go, like my situation, I knew some guys were going to go off the table before me, some bigger guys, some bigger names, kind of watch that. And then we have another meeting and we see what's on the table.
You mentioned like the years and the financial side of it. Sometimes it's not really that different. But how do you balance term versus money? Because that's something we're going to get to with Fred, but it must be something you got to think about for, you know, 2-year contract with more money versus a 4-year contract that has more term. Mm-hmm. Is that like a state of life kind of thing?
Yeah, I think it's where you are career-wise, what you are. I think with Fred, like the reason that's enticing is because we're looking at a guy, one, like if we're being honest, like he's already won. Not saying he doesn't want to win some more, but he has won.
Yeah.
He is in a situation where he can make, in Texas, if it is Houston, no state tax, the most money in 2 years that he can make, like basically what he made off his last deal, like in 2 seasons, like the whole deal, right?
Yeah.
More so without the tax product, because we know Toronto's tax is different than Texas tax, obviously.
Yes.
Like, it's enticing because he can look at it like it's only 2 years. I go help this situation. I help these young guys. I play. Probably don't have to tax my body crazy because of the situation, because we're trying to like rebuild a little bit. I'm not going to have to play 38, 40 minutes. Just trying to like do this. We're trying to help. I'm trying to help guide some guys. And if they use me that way, I come out of these 2 years that much more richer, like probably like not that he's not set, but now you get the most you get, like out of his career, where he came in, his story, what he's able to get. Cause now we know his business side, that's very important to him and his legacy and the things he's doing off the floor and things he wants to do for his family is very important to him. And that we all want to get paid at some point. Right. So to be able to get the biggest pay that you can get for just 2 years and come out on the other side and go play some more, I don't know if it's really that crazy not to take it.
Yeah. I mean, he's 29. At the end of the contract, he'll be 31 years old if it's a 2-year, which is what we're hearing. And for anyone who doesn't know, it's roughly like 2 years, $80 million. So an AAV of 40 mil per season. And for the Raptors, I mean, with some of their restrictions in terms of, you know, re-signing Yak, and they could offer more money, but that would probably mean that they have to, you know, get rid of some other players on the roster. It could be some of the guys off the bench. It could be Chris Boucher, Otto Porter Jr., Thad Young. That could happen, like Malachi Flynn. And they would have to really dig deep into the pockets if they want to make this happen. And there's been some more recent reports that, I mean, the Raptors, they're getting calls on OG, they're getting calls on Pascal, and they're like, no, we are not rebuilding, we are retooling. However, without Fred VanVleet, that does become much harder. I did a video, like I posted it today, and it was on Javon Carter. In the event the Raptors do lose Fred, he could make sense. But I also stated in the video that, but he's not Fred. And you are going to take steps backwards. He's from a fit standpoint, you know, from what the Raptors want to do. It increases the usage of some of the other guys on the team, Scottie Barnes, Gary Trent Jr., assuming he's back. OG Anunoby gets more touches. But from a winning game standpoint, from a leadership standpoint, you are losing the total will not be the same if Fred VanVleet was there. And our conversation that we had with Fred, which I really enjoyed, but we both know that it wasn't received well by everybody because of how honest and candid he was. He's turned some people the wrong way. I wonder if that could be a factor for him. Like, he told us that, you know, he's been kind of not really on social media the same way as he has been in previous seasons. And the season that it was a lot of losing. It wasn't common for everybody. And so fans reacted. I'm sure he wasn't the only one who probably stopped looking at social media as much, but that has to be a factor for a player, right? Like, how does a fan base appreciate you, or do they?
Yeah. And what's crazy about that is that people were upset about things that were said, and even a little bit what I said, because I was on Twitter and social media and the last couple of days after, we were still talking about it. Those yeah. same people, and now we're sitting here talking about this guy about to get $80 million for 2 years.
Yeah.
So, like, you can say what you want about what you think value is or how you and we talked about this before we got on camera, like, looking at the season, people, especially when things are going the way that they probably could have went, or we could say should have went, because that team has a lot of talent, things, they're going to pick their spots and who they want to pick on and what parts they want to.
Yeah.
They're going to pick a guy that's going to be a whipping boy. That's going to be in even situations that, because at one point we thought it was going to be Pascal. Like, yep. The way it was going, like, people were, they were upset. Like, people were at him. Mm-hmm. Like, he's supposed to be the one. He's supposed to change. It's just the nature of that part of the game. So I don't know if that weighs in on Fred's decision on where he plays, because we also know next year, 15 games in, every single one of those people could be they'll be different. Like,
yeah,
they'll be different. They'll yeah. be different in during summer league after he resigns, like, because he decided to come back, and they'll look at the season from a clean slate again. Like, we're still talking about, like we talked about, a guy of one of only 8 or 9 guys that averaged 19, 20, and 8 assists or so.
Yeah.
Like, handful
in
of guys.
And a down year as well. He didn't have the best year. Yeah.
We can't throw away this because of our feelings. We can't throw away what yeah. we actually have. It's like Tobias Harris is talking about it. Like, casual fans will throw me away for a crumble cookie, but he's right. You're not going to get a 6'9 forward that can post, shoot it, play off the dribble, defend best guys, play most yeah. of the, you're not going to get that back.
Yeah.
At his percentages nope. also.
Sure. I was looking at Tobias Harris after his comments there, and from his dad too. And I looked at some of the numbers, and I mean, he may not be the scorer that his dad was saying, but I mean, you gotta factor in some proud dad stuff with that. But he did average like 21 points, 20 points, 19 points in consecutive seasons. And he was shooting around 48%. He's definitely taken like many steps backwards in terms of his scoring ability to accept a role, which, my gosh, we've talked about that so much on this pod, and I appreciate it. But he did that because it was for the betterment of the team. But then we can't forget that he's still that guy.
Exactly. And we do that, though. And I wouldn't even say his ability, just his opportunities.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not that it's gone away. And then, like, and that fades, and that hurts a player sometimes too, because we're creatures of habit. Like, we work and we drill and we scheme, we do all these things every day. So, like, you could forget some of the things that he might had in his game or have in his game just because of the opportunity that he's given. He might have to shoot 3 more threes than he wants to just because of the way the spacing has been, because now you got Maxey and Embiid, obviously, and James Harden. You got these guys who are ball-dominant guys now. We're not going to run a lot of mid-post pace for you. We're not going to run a lot of things where you get dribble handoffs and put you in a situation. You're going to have to get it kind of how you live. And if you get rolling, now we'll give it to you. But a lot of nights, you got to go find your space and create opportunities for yourself a little bit in the Florida game before we start calling plays.
Yeah. And I think Tobias, the 76ers, could probably relate to the Raptors a little bit too, what we saw this past season and the numbers that Fred had. I mean, I said it was a down year because I think he's capable of more. I mean, he shot 8% worse in terms of catch and shoot than he did the previous season. Like, those numbers alone, that's a difference maker. And his pedigree as a shooter, it can't be negated in one down year where he was obviously hobbling at various points. The conversation that we had with him, I went back and listened to it because I just wanted to see if there was something that really stuck out to me. And the things that I enjoyed from that was what he was saying about, you know, his goal is to play 10, 15 years in the NBA. That was the original goal, and how versatile he is, how willing he is to take on different hats for the betterment of the team. He mentioned that, you know, he's like, it's funny that when I had my pre-draft workout with the Raptors, all I did was pick and roll. And then we didn't do it for years. Like, I think during the bench mob days, there was some of that. But then after that, he wasn't doing that at all. Right. And then Yakupova comes in and now he has to relearn those skills. And if you watch closely, you could see the progression that he had during that time with Yak this past season, to the point where it was becoming like other teams were like, we have to stop this. And I would love to see what that looks like next season with, you know, a healthier Fred, better chemistry. Maybe Yak is in the gym too. We'll see if he comes back as well. But that could be great for them. And it's a difficult thing to wrap my head around Fred not being back, not just because of what are the Raptors going to do from a point guard standpoint, but he's been with the franchise for so long. Like, you could see him and OG and Pascal being like lifers, you know. Obviously, it's the NBA. Things change in a heartbeat, but that's the relationship they've had and they've formed with the franchise. And him not being here would be really strange, really, really strange.
And I'm not sold on it yet. Like, I don't think that it's because, you know, we also talking about a front office who's pretty candid. Like, they don't really bite their tongue. And they're not.
They said they want to bring him back. They said it.
They don't really move in a way of, like, bluffing and saying stuff and just doing, like, they're pretty. No. You know, Masai does not give a flying about what anybody's got to say. He's into winning and he's into doing it how he wants to do it. And he's pretty upfront. And that's why it's hard for a lot of people with him. Because he is so upfront, he is so honest. And it might be in the moment and it might not be the right thing to say right then, but it's honest. It's an honest assessment of right then. And people, it's hard in the lead because we're so used to things being masked. Oh, we're not going to trade you, and then we trade you the next day. Oh, we're not going to da-da-da-da-da. Oh, we're not thinking about that. Justin, you know what I mean? We just try to make everybody feel good. And he's not into feeling good. He's into doing our jobs and winning games, right? And I'm not, I think it's still, I don't think it's a 2-year thing like Houston for him to be back. I think that's the difference between the situations coming back to Toronto. If we're going at this, let's not have to deal with this 2 years from now. Let's make it 3-4 years. Yeah. And if it's spread out a little bit different, the money's a little different, but we're really going to go try to win this thing and stay and make this thing a dynasty or make this thing special. Then we show that in the years. Cause guys don't like to deal with free agents. I know people think it's an exciting time. It's exciting when you sign the paper and you get, you know what I mean? And then you know how much money. Nobody wants to go into every other season, every season dealing with, like, where am I going to be? Especially when you got a family, especially when you're trying to build something. Even as a career, we talked about this, having different coaches every year. That's not fun. Like, that's not – trust me, I know. I had a different coach every year for whatever amount of years, like, until I was gone.
Yeah.
until I was at home.
I see both sides of it. You know, again, turning 31, still many more years. And for a guy whose slogan is better on yourself, I could see him sitting there saying, I'll be just fine at 31 and I'll be able to get another big contract because I'm that confident in my abilities. He was saying things to us in that interview we did. He's like, I want to stay in my development stage. I'm constantly improving. Yes, I'm not a perfect player. I got things I got to get better at, but I believe in my potential. There are things I haven't shown yet. And I want to at some point. He's telling us this, right? So those are like it's hard to think that he's not going to factor that into. What's up?
I was about to say, the piggyback on what you're saying, the other thing we got to remember is that the older guys that get bigger contracts again, and that 31's not old, it's older in the league though.
Yeah.
They're winners. They're winning situations. You don't see older guys come from losing teams and get big deals.
Mm.
So that's the thing you kind of play into it too. Like, obviously if he goes to Houston and does the 2-year thing and he turns the situation around, then yes. But if he goes down there, yes, he gets paid. But if they just lose the whole time and it doesn't turn positive, you don't get a big deal like that again coming out of there. No matter what your number, no matter what a guy's numbers are, even guys that come off losing teams averaging 20 points a game, they don't get the biggest deal they could get. Coming out of winning cures all is true in the league.
So like, there's a risk here. Yeah. There's a real risk here.
Because everywhere he's at, they're winning.
Yeah.
That's why he keeps getting paid. That's why Chris Paul got paid again. When he went places, you can say what you want, but they turned around. They won. Same reason why, obviously, LeBron James can keep getting paid. The same reason why, because these guys, they win. And there's other guys like Jimmy Butler will get paid again at some point.
Yeah.
Because of what they bring. Like, this is the thing with that. So I think Fred knows this.
Mm-hmm.
He does. That's something you put on the table. You go down there and you lose for 2 years. Yeah, I just got this, but and maybe that's fine after I make 80 for 2 years with no state tax. Maybe it's fine that I don't need the big one. Maybe it's to get it out of the way.
Yeah, I mean, and he's aware of this. He's a smart businessman. A couple of years of losing aren't going to help his value, especially now you look at it the other way. Now you are 31 years old and you just had 2 years of losing when you left Toronto. Oh, now there is the narrative that Toronto was making Fred VanVleet the player he was, that kind of a thing. And if it comes down to the millions, I mean, if it's he wants 33, not 30 with the Raptors, I could see Masai doing it. And that could mean another transaction, as I mentioned earlier. But they know that if they're looking to continue to win, not having Fred VanVleet is going to be a problem. And you, if that does happen, then Scotty, Gary, all these guys, like, it's your chance to build. But then there's also risk involved in that when it comes to trying to win games. Like, those guys are still learning about themselves as ball handlers, as players, as game planners, just learning the fundamentals and being put in situations that they're uncomfortable. They got to go through those reps. But Fred has gone through a lot of reps. We're going to talk about Gabe Vincent in a second, but even he had a late start to his NBA career, right? So even if he was to become a Toronto Raptor, even though Pat Riley has said that he wants to re-sign him, if he does, right, it's still not going to be the same as Fred, right? Because there's not the experience factor.
I also think that when you're trying to build a dynasty type situation or a thing where you want to continue to be able to, like a passing of the torch type of situation type thing, you can't reset in the middle of it too many times because there's nobody to pass the torch. Like the guy that you never see the full potential of the guys who are going to be your guys, like your Mount Rushmore of your situation, right? So like in Golden State, those guys can pass all that knowledge and experience to these guys as they're playing. So guys can be built up while they're playing with them, right? Mm. That's the kind of way you want to set it up. The reason why, and obviously you want the coaching staff to be consistent and things like that. Reason why San Antonio was able to stay good for so long, because there's always a piece of it left to give. Yes. To other guys that are around, and the staff's been consistent and things like that. So you want to continue to have a piece of what's really special about our culture and things around. So as much of that you can have as you're bringing in young guys. So like having a Grady Dick come into the situation with the guys that know what they're doing, that expedites his curve too.
Mm-hmm.
Like that expedites how fast and how much he can learn, how much he can soak in, because now we can leave him on the floor more. Because we got three other guys with the experience that can kind of help him with his mistakes and take up for some of that. Two, he's got so it doesn't always have to come from a coach. Because when it always has to come from the coach, it starts to feel like they're on you all the time. Like it starts to feel when you're with the guy who's been through it and done it.
It's like a parent. Your parent versus your big brother or big sister telling you something.
Especially when you've seen these guys do what they've done for years now. So now he's not telling you this just because. He's telling you this because he was shooting with you too before practice. Mm-hmm. You saw him last year be an all-star. You saw him make this many threes in the season. You've seen him defend this guy, whatever it is they're trying to teach you. And it's just different. Which is why veterans, we had this conversation, are so important.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In this league.
Yeah, and they're going away. There's a lot fewer out there now. Teams are spending their money a lot differently. Before we get to Grady, I wanted to get your thoughts on Gabe Vincent, how he would fit with the Raptors. So just so people have a bit of a background, 6'3", he turned 27, just turned 27, happy birthday. In the playoffs, he averaged 12.7 points, 40% from the field, 37.8% from three, 3.5 assists. He was a bit up and down. And I think Miami as a whole, I think most of us know they were up and down. But once he kind of stapled himself as part of the rotation that eventually a starter February onward, he was pretty damn good. And, you know, in the playoffs, he hit a few big shots. I think of that that pull-up versus Boston in game two, where he hit that over Jason Tatum. Then there was a shot 10 seconds left in game five against the Bucks, where he had that pull-up transition three, which was massive, obviously. So talented guy, obviously fits Miami like a glove. And I think that also means that he probably fits Toronto like a glove. So your thoughts on Gabe?
I mean, one, you know where he's coming from.
Yep.
Coming from Miami, you know how they do things as far as like being in shape, being prepared. So you know what type of mentality he has and how he takes his craft. So that's a plus, right? Coming into, he's tough. He defends his route. You know, he's had to scratch and claw to be where he's at. So you know he doesn't take nothing for granted. Those are all the things that kind of jump at you right away. You're looking to bring a guy into the mix. You know what kind of energy he brings in. Offensively, super talented, shooting the ball. Gotten really good in pick and roll situations, scoring-wise. I think Fred gets a little bit wide playmaking-wise. But scoring-wise, he's got a good mid-range game also, and I think he gets that nod on Fred, maybe more so because of his size. They bring some similar things, but Gabe's size allows him to – his highlights are different, right? Shown he can shoot it, which is a big thing with space. He can extend his range a little bit. But I think the biggest thing is that he brings in a winning mentality, like a hungry guy who's tough-minded, who's going to defend, who's going to play hard, shoot it. I think he's good in both guard positions. I think he can play some point. I think he's really good at on the off ball because you put him in some moving stuff and put him in space, handle it and shoot it. But I think he's a fit. If I think he's a fit with Fred, with or not, I think they'd be good together. Like I don't even
sure.
I think if you're looking at a guy, and I like Javon Carter, like you said before too. Obviously, Javon is a tier under those guys because he hadn't seen the minutes and he didn't have the things like that, but he's another tough-minded guy. I was with him in Memphis for a little bit when I was there.
Oh, yeah?
Great on-ball defender, great energy, works his tail off. I'm talking about, like, there was never a time I went back to the gym at night and did not see him. Like, never a time. I'm talking about if I just went when I was staying close by there to go pick up something I left, not even to work out, he was in there. Music blasting, running, shooting, doing everything. He's turned himself into a really good three-point shooter also.
Yeah,
wasn't the thing that he had before. So I mean, he's a great option also.
Yeah, for Miami, they got to make some decisions. Max Strus, he's being targeted by the Indiana Pacers. There's a rumored contract of 3 years, $48 million. So they may have to make a decision between those two. But Pat Riley is going to be meeting with Gabe. And as I said, they do want to re-sign him. So we got to keep that in mind. He kind of reminds me of Eddie House with his trigger a little bit. You know?
Yeah, he's not as wild, but yeah.
No, not at all. But I mean,
I'm with you. I'm with you though. Yeah.
But the quick trigger, like he likes to reject screens a lot and he's able to just pull up from three and there's a movement shooting ability, as you mentioned. He's got a runner, like he would be an interesting player to bring in. Less experience than Fred. Just so we know, the Raptors could only offer him the mid-level exception, which is $12.4 million a year. And that would be probably a four-year offer worth $53 million. That could be like the extent that they could go with the contract. Again, Miami does want to bring him back. And it's funny that he has like a similar trajectory and like a path as Fred too, you know, just step by step by step, he kept on proving himself. So there's similar backgrounds as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All right, let's get to Grady. This is the money stuff right here. So I wanted to get your opinion, obviously, because of your pedigree as a shooter. In terms of the fundamentals that you look for in great shooters, like where is he excelling right now? Where is he probably like ahead of the curve in some ways?
I think he's got on his catch and shoot. He seems to be prepared. He's got good feet, good hands. Like, doesn't have a big dip like, you know, a lot of guys have to get that really. He doesn't have a – I've seen a lot of stuff I've seen on him. He doesn't have a big dip in situations where he can get his shot off quick. And I think he has the ability to get his shot off in tight spaces even quicker too.
Yeah.
Not good size, length, much more athletic than I think he's given credit for. It might not be
so too.
For, like, high-flying athletic, but he's able to do things. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it might not be so much a 40-inch vert, but it's 30-something, yeah. And he can get – and he's acrobatic enough to do finishes, which means that he's – you can get him in some moving shooting stuff because he's got good athleticism to catch on the run, put brakes on, good feet, things like that. But I think the biggest thing is just him understanding. Like, he's got good stuff in his triple threat. He understands his space. He understands where he can get to.
Is he like ahead in some ways, or is he kind of where he should be? Because he had mentioned that he did a workout with Darko, and also he mentioned that it was kind of unique that he was put through a workout by the head coach. Is that unique?
Yeah. I think that only happened once that I can think. I know Larry Brown did it one time. Telling you how far back this is. Larry Brown did it one time when I was, but that's the only time I remember it being the head coach doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a new head coach too. So, I mean, maybe that has something to do with it too.
From what I understand about Darko, that's kind of how he rolls. He has a bit of a Kenny Atkinson on him. Like, he wants to be in the situation, in the grind. But I was like looking that. It up. Yeah, I like it too. I think it's part of how current head coaches, emerging head coaches, how they got to be, because I think players like that style. He has a 34-inch vertical, by the way. I looked it up.
6'7"?
6'8".
Hey, yeah. So you can see there might be there's a little bit of, I think he was a better playmaker at this stage, but a little Gordon Hayward in him, like size and movement ability. And we saw G-Tom be able to expand his game really as a playmaker in certain situations and things like that. And I think he can grow that way.
G-Time? That was Gordon Hayward's nickname?
That was his nickname.
G-Time? You kind of just touched on it, but how does his size and build? He's a bit wiry, right? But he's also 6'8". And, I mean, a 34-inch vert with that kind of wingspan, with that kind of length, how does – that help him get his shot off?
Project 6'9", right? Like, no, but I mean, his length and, like I said, him not having that big dip in a high release definitely helps with things in the mid-range areas and things that he wants to do outside of three-point shooting. But as far as just, like, contest and things, like people, him getting people off his body, because we know bigger wings don't like to chase. So wings that like to do movement shooting are always going to get smaller guys. So you don't need as much space to be able to get into his mechanics and get his shot off without it being bothered. I think that's a big thing.
If you were in the lab with him, what are tweaks you're suggesting to help him get a little bit better at it? It could be, you know, his mechanics, his footwork, his shot readiness, whatever the case is. Like, you're gonna know what things he could probably help him better than I do, but what things are you suggesting?
As far as right away, the first thing I always, as far as with shooters, always attack the feet. That's just me. Like, because if I can get your feet ready in a bunch of different types of situations, that changes how many different types of plays we can run for you and how many different ways we can get you opportunities. So we can get your feet good and we can get your feet right, we can keep you on balance. Because a lot of things with shooters, especially when you're going to do any type of movement, is balance. It's being able to create square shoulders or not, even if you float a little bit, being able to square your body, and that's feet. That's being able to put your feet and understanding the footwork it takes to be able to get into these positions and readiness also. So, like, we would talk about knowing defensive rotations, knowing the way teams like to rotate on backside so you can put yourself in position to get standstill catch and shoot shots. Because the more of those you can get, the better rhythm you can get yourself in.
I mean, you've talked to me about what defenses you've encountered when teams are just trying to negate you. You know, it's top blocking. It's just like being under your jersey to not let you get away. I would imagine that's going to be a big transition for him. He probably faced a bit of that in college, but, you know, being with the Raptors, with the players that we think they're going to have going into next season, it's probably going to be a lot of spot up looks, I think. And we'll have to see how much they can really experiment with them. But I guess actually, let's start here. what are plays that teams ran for you to get you open?
I think so. Speaking on for him, just his ability right now, I think the biggest thing, one of the things is using him as a screener. Like whether he be the guy setting on ball screen and slipping out, or he's screening to get a screen, things like that. So he can get, so the physicality is not the thing that takes him out of the game, because people are going to try to, they're going to top lock body him, try to just run him off everything. Just try to be physical with him. That's the first thing you do to any young guy. Like they don't know how to handle, especially guys on the wing that want to be shooters, and you try to take their legs from them and try to do different things. But I would definitely put him in a lot of flying stuff, just stuff that keeps him moving, keeps him on the run, so guys can't just body him up the whole time. And if they try to do that on the run, we can get fouls. Other thing is, I wouldn't put him in pick and rolls right away. I would use more dribble handoffs first, because I don't want to have to get crowded by these little guards and we take his confidence from him not being able to handle some of that pressure. I think we use stuff where we make the decision easier on them. If they go under, you shoot it. If they chase you over, you take that dribble handoff and you straight line drive until somebody gets in front of you. Like, I don't think we overload him with a lot of decision making early, just because he's got to get used to the speed and the way spacing is taken up so fast. In college, you might have had two dribbles. Now you got one. Like it, and in some colleges, you know, college defense, they play hard. They play on boxes and elbows too. So like, he understands, but it's just everybody's length and athleticism is elite. Like, you're not the most elite person on the floor.
Yeah. After the draft, Bill Self did a bit of a media availability, and I asked him what kind of plays they ran for Grady to get him open, especially in like DHO situations, get him handling the ball a little bit. And he mentioned pinch post. So can you tell people what that means? And also, like, specifically the kinds of plays that we might see the Raptors run for him. Is it like, I mean, a floppy screen, whatever kind of comes to mind for you? Yeah.
Dish. I think the pinch post is interesting actually for him, because he's 6'8", so he can play either side of it. He could be the guy that catches it. They used to do this in Denver with Melo. They used to run a pick and roll at the elbow with him and Kenyon Martin. So
yeah, Melo, it was lethal. Lethal.
That would catch it in the pinch post, and the guy would cut off of him, and then they run the pick and roll right there. So that way Melo doesn't have to play the dancing game to get into a low spot to set up the guard to run off the pick and roll. Or Grady could be the guy that passes and gets a handoff from the pinch guy.
Yeah.
He can fly off of that guy. So you get, he can be both of those guys. I think that's interesting, because you can take a lot of the space that he has to figure out how to cover out with him being that guy. As far as any other plays that I was just off ball screens, like high off ball screens, like I'm talking about going to get him when he's at like half court, out of the half in space. So like when he comes off that thing, there's space for him to be able to shoot it, put it down, make a pocket pass. They're just put him in space. Don't overload him too much with too much tight stuff, because they're going to be physical.
Yeah.
So he needs space to operate.
So early pins, things like that, you know, in transition, you have like a big Jakob Poeltl, a Scotty Barnes, kind of just like following him around, and you can use some misdirection. He can flip out to the corner. Yeah.
See, you just kind of see it. Like, if I'm offset the ball and I'm coming down, I would start calling the guy at half court. If there wasn't an action already happening, because the one thing that does, even if I don't get a shot off, it just starts the offensive flow. And I can dictate the pace of the offensive flow because I'm flying off of it because I want a shot. So even if I don't get it, the sense of urgency of the defense goes up because of my speed. So now everybody's engaged. So now somebody's open, the big pops back, he's open, he hands it off. We get now the, I just set the pace for that possession because of that. When we take our time and walk into it and get down to the corner and maybe come get me when we don't find anything, then it changes the trajectory of that possession. But if I can fly off of that thing with speed and make somebody have to be like, shooter, shooter, or switch, switch, or whatever, now I just ignited the whole everything.
Hold it. And having a movement shooter is like actually a play. It is a play.
All the time. Like, because you just, that's the biggest thing too that I learned as I got and throughout my career that I try to talk to young guys about, especially shooters right away. Carry a threat. Like, there's no move, no move for no reason. Like, even if the play is for you to come off this and to throw it back to get it to something else, you fly off it like you could get a shot. Because I promise you, if you're being the shooter that you are, you come off of that open in the middle of the play and you get that, nobody's mad about that shot. like use everything as an opportunity as a shooter, because that way we keep everybody on high alert all the time. And we get stuff out of, we get layups out of stuff that was supposed to be setups.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Chris Paul had mentioned when he's with the Clippers that, and they had JJ Redick, that it's like when in doubt, we ran floppy. That's why I mentioned it to you earlier, because it's like such a safe way just to get the defense moving. And there's a decent chance you're going to get a good shot out of it. Because if JJ Redick is turning into a mid-range jumper or turning into a three, that is a good shot for your offense. And then you match in with, you know, JJ's experience and like how much better he got over the years and the reps that he got of, you know, recognizing the second level and making that kick pass. And then, you know, the defense is like constantly moving now and your offense is in a pretty good spot. I found it interesting, and maybe it's not something that I always paid as much attention to, but when I was looking at Kyle Korver's stuff, JJ Redick, your stuff, how often a side is cleared to make sure that you are going into space. And you mentioned that a moment ago. What, how effective is that for a shooter?
I think what it allows me to be able to utilize every part of the threat I am in that play. So with that side is clear and it's only me and the big, now I'm able to utilize the option of having the option to be able to pass to this big as a way to either get me a shot or get him a layup. So now the big's got to make a decision. If there's three of us over there, he's got extra help. So now he could be up on my screen knowing his guy can't get an open shot because there's extra help. Now, when it's emptied out over there and I come off, the person that has to help the big has to come from the other side of the floor, the ball side of the floor this way. And you're taught you don't leave the ball. You don't leave the ball side.
No, you don't. Now, you can't.
The ball handler's first pass is an easy pass to your guy. So now I think it's so important as much as you can to clear sides like that.
Yeah. Because
the other thing is now if I don't get anything – and it's not a pass made, the pick and roll can be ran going that way also with nobody over there. The big can just go into another screen. So there's so much spacing and so many things that can come out of it. I think that's why it's so great to do that. But the biggest thing is if we can clear that side, we can create so many opportunities for just that two-man game with the shooter and the big because there's no help.
Even when I mentioned like the kinds of plays you can run with a movement shooter, like the possibilities are endless if there's space. Like there's just so many ways which you can utilize them. I mean, it's pin downs. There's like the fan action, which I saw that the Atlanta Hawks use a lot with Kyle Korver. And that's kind of where like he would pivot to one side and then he just shift his defender. And then as the defender was turning the other way, there's Paul Millsap setting a screen for him and the big is in drop. And now he's got a wide open shot, but those are just a couple, like there's so many ways. And that's why it's exciting to see what Grady can be in a few years, because there is reason to think that he is going to be more than just a shooter, you know, and I think he wants that. He can rebound. He can move pretty well. The hands are pretty good defensively.
During the season. He did a lot of things. People topside and he went back door. They threw it. Obviously, some of the plays were bad defensive plays. They just topside and went on his body. But the fact that he can go get it is another threat to the way you can guard him. So I think there's so many things he can do. The only thing that that's going to be his challenge is guarding the smaller guards, because that's what's going to happen, because there's going to be smaller guards guarding him because they're going to chase.
Yeah.
If those are ball handling smaller guards, that's going to be his thing he's going to have to learn. But that's anybody coming in the league. The smaller guards got to learn how to guard the guards in the league because they're so crappy. Sure. So many pick and rolls. There's so many pick and rolls. Like, you know what I mean? So, like, you got to get – that's something you got to learn, period. So it's not even just an attack on him.
I'm curious how impactful he can be this upcoming season. And obviously who's on the roster is a part of it too, but having someone with that kind of gravity as a shooter is, haven't had that since you on the Raptors. So it's been sorely, sorely missed. And especially with how they've constructed their roster, they could use some just shooting, some consistency from a few players. And how much he plays, who he plays with. He's already said that I'm looking forward to pairing with Scottie Barnes. We can be a dynamic duo. That's great.
I'm excited to see their energy together. They got really good energy, it seems like.
Yeah, they do.
And I think that's something that'll help this group. I think that was a little of that missing, that uplifting energy last year. The other thing is plays they can run together. They can screen for each other. He can be the screener. Scottie can be the screener. They can be a tandem if they figure it out. But I think the biggest thing is just, we talk about the shooting. I think he, if he attacks that as that's my thing for this,
yeah,
takes that as that's my job. Because I think there's some guys that have been able to make shots, but nobody's decided that this is what I'm going to be. Like, this is where I'm going to carry my threat the most in it. And I think that's the difference. So it's a mindset in it. And, and it's not saying that you can't do other things, but we need this more than I need you to do that. I have a bunch of guys that do that. I don't have anybody that does this. And you have the ability to do this. So let's dominate with that and just have everything else be icing on the cake right now.
He's got a nice one dribble pull up too. Like, when he does get run off the line, like, he's training. He's done a lot of preparation for this moment. So it's going to be fun, and we'll see who's on the Raptors. But we've talked so much about, you know, Scottie Barnes and where he's going to be going into year three. It's a big year for him. And that also does, you know, factor in, like, is Fred VanVleet going to be back? What's Scottie Barnes' role going to be? But it would be cool. It's cool to think about the possibility that you have, like, this duo. And even with add Gary Trent Jr. too, like, those three, and those are kind of your non, like, those are your bench minutes. That's like the combination that you're using. And there's something really to it, because again, if Grady can just come in and he can just hit shots as he has, and there's going to be an adjustment obviously for him, but there's something really fun there, something really that could really cook. And I think it'd be really good for Scotty to be able to be more of a playmaker in those situations. And I wish we saw more of Gary Trent and Scotty as a pairing, as a DHO combination, pick and roll combination. It was there at points, but then it kind of didn't really stay there. So we'll have to see what happens. Anything else on Grady or in general?
I'm just excited to see him in space and see him with some guys that are gonna, you know, try to highlight and create situations for him and see how they use him. But I think he's got a lot of ability, man. Like, I think he's got a really good chance of really being a big part of this team going forward.
Hell yeah. All right, bro. This has been great. Thanks so much. Any other thoughts? Just on life? Maybe you want to go get some sleep? I don't know. It's up to you.
I'm good. I'm just keep going.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
That's all I would tell anybody. Keep going. No matter what it is, keep going.
Don't blink or you're going to fall asleep.
Man, don't do it.
All right, man. Thanks so much, everyone. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
Awesome.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.